So just a brief review of what we were doing last time. So what we're learning together, this Zaman, is we're learning about employee and employer relationships in halacha. And what we have been studying is that while certainly an agreement between an employee and employer is a important relationship, it seems to have different rules than other kinyanim, other business relationships in halacha. And last time we got together, we really started studying this through the prism of our Mishnah, and we were discussing how binding a verbal contract between an employee and employer is. And we noted that on the one hand, generally in halacha, verbal contracts don't have too much monetary requirements attached to them. Generally, there's such a thing called kinyan devarim, which means if something is merely an acquisition based upon words, it isn't binding monetarily. You can, if I just promise you to sell you something and I decide not to, you have no claim monetarily against me. But and that is indeed true in the first line of our Mishnah. We saw that if an employer backs out of an agreement with an employee at the very beginning of the relationship, there is no penalty for doing that. However, we also saw in our Mishnah that it seems that in some circumstances, namely Davar HaAved, in the situation in which because of either the employee or employer backing out of the relationship, one of them loses, or so then there is an actual consequence to that, and we were wondering why that is. Why is it that in certain circumstances, at least, the verbal contract between an employee and an employer is binding and has monetary ramifications? And so last week we left off with the Ritva, and his approach is to try to find a standard for this in halacha that sometimes indeed verbal contracts can be binding. And he derives it from the halacha of arev, of a guarantor who makes a commitment to be a guarantor on a loan, where the Gemara says that because of the reliance and commitment that the guarantor demonstrates to the person who made the loan, and because of his satisfaction that he was trusted with backing up this loan, he commits himself to be a guarantor on the loan. And even just through the verbal commitment, the arev is then required to pay back the lender in the case where the loved, the person who loaned the money, cannot. And we also see in other places in halacha, I'll mention, there is a halacha when we talk about tana'im in a marriage. The Gemara says that if the father of the bride and the father of the groom, when they make verbal commitments to each other in terms of what they're willing to contribute to the new couple, that is also binding, even just verbally. And the reason is because of the fact that since they're so happy and satisfied about the new union between the chasan and the kala, between the bride and the groom, that satisfaction drives them to commit themselves to then following through on their verbal commitments. So the Ritva, what he does is he finds another basis for this halacha that a verbal contract can indeed be binding, and he says that is indeed what is happening in our Mishnah, that just like in those cases a verbal commitment results in a monetary commitment, so too here in the case of an employee and an employer, a verbal commitment can result in a financial commitment as well. So that's where we left off with last week, and I'd like to continue. So let's take a look here at source number 10, as we have it from the second page of the source sheet. So what we're talking about now, again, is this idea, what is behind this halacha of davar havi, right? What requires the employees to pay back, or at least to have a financial commitment when their backing out of the deal results in a financial loss for the employer? So we had the Ritva, who, as I just said that it's based on this idea that verbal commitments and reliance can create a financial chiyuv, a financial obligation. Now I have the Nesivos HaMishpat in Siman Shem Lama Gimel. So let's take a look. Here we go. Source number 10. HaMaramshef b'sugya zu hiksha. The Maramshef asks in this sugya as follows. L'man d'sfirele, according to the opinion who holds, d'afilu b'dovra avut shal mamon k'shalo sachar achirim ein misham mehezik. Okay, so we'll see in just a few minutes that the Mishnah says, in a situation in which there is a davar ha'avid, there is a financial loss for the employer, he has two ways of recovering that financial loss. Either he can hire other employees to do the work that the first employees refused to do, and he can get the money from whatever he paid to them already, and it's on their account, or he can trick them and lie to them, essentially, about what he's willing to pay his employees. And when they work for him again, he can still pay them the original rate. That is what the Mishnah allows an employer to do in a situation in which it's a davar ha'avid. However, according to many Rishonim, if he doesn't do that, namely, he doesn't hire other workers, and the employer just sits there and says, you know, it's really horrible that these employees backed out on me, and he's complaining, and meanwhile, the loss is occurring. Let's say in the case of the Mishnah, he put his flax, and he was soaking it, and the more it's there soaking, it potentially can get lost, and he's just sitting there and complaining and saying, these employees, they're horrible, I'm going to lose money because of them. If he doesn't then go and hire other workers to get the flax out of where it's soaking, it's his loss. Right? It's not that they actually have to pay out of their pockets, according to some Rishonim, for the Davar Ha'avid. So that, therefore, the Maharam Shabbat Sefal and Kasha. Second line in Source 10, Imkain. Hacha b'polim shalo sachar achirim damya. Right? The Mishnah, the Shulchan Aruch says, Umay mishalim kandam kiso. The Shulchan Aruch says as follows. If what happens is the employees are working for their boss, and he backs out, the employer backs out, and because of that, the employees either lose their job or they have to work for a smaller salary, the employer has to pay them back for that. He has to make up the loss that resulted because of him backing out of that relationship. So the question is, it doesn't seem to be parallel. Right, in the case of the employer losing money, he doesn't have the right to actually get money from the employees. They don't have to pay money from their pockets to him, according to this opinion. All he can do is hire other workers, or he can trick them into continuing to work for him. But he doesn't get actual money because of the loss. But the workers do. Right? If the workers now are going to have a lesser salary, they are entitled to actual money from the employer. And it seems to be an imbalance. So why is that? That's the Maharam Shif's question. Okay, so that's the question. Why is there an imbalance between employee and employer? Says the Nesivos. L'fi ani yotaiti lo kasha kla. It is not a question at all. This idea that in the case in which an employee backs out and it results in a financial loss for the employer, that the employer can then hire other workers on their account. That's not a Torah halacha. It's not a biblical rule. It's not that you're actually entitled from the Torah to that loss. It's just the Rabbanon. The rabbis came and they said, look, you know, it's true that verbal contracts, or at least in this case, verbal contracts shouldn't be binding. You shouldn't have to pay money just because you backed out of a verbal agreement, but it's not right. It's not fair. People are not going to be willing to enter into these relationships if you can just back out without any penalty, even when they lose money. So the rabbis came and they imposed this penalty upon the workers who back out of the arrangement. But it's not ikar adin, it's not a natural outcome of this agreement. This must be some sort of institution of the rabbis. Or, is it something a little bit similar to what we've seen previously? The Chazal assessed that the agreement was originally that they were obligating themselves to pay back the damage, at least up to their salary. He says, you can't ask a question on a rabbinic decree. Meaning the answer is, why is there an imbalance between workers and the employer? That's the way Chazal did it. That's just the way they saw it. They saw it fit to require the workers, rather the employer, to pay him money out of his pocket when he backs out. The employees, they didn't see fit to make that takana. So what we see here is clearly that the Nesivos is saying this idea of Davar Ha'aved is not a natural outcome of their relationship. It's not that their verbal contract is binding to the degree that in the event there is a financial loss, they have to make up for that. No, really the verbal contract, just like other areas of Halacha, should not be binding. But Chazal came and they imposed a fine upon the employer if when they back out of the arrangement, it causes a loss to the other party. So that's interesting. Do we think that the Ritva would agree with such a thing?
What?
Right, the Ritva sounds like it's a natural outcome. Exactly, the Ritva is saying this is the Halacha. There is other standards to this in Halacha that verbal contracts can indeed be binding. The Nasivo says, no, this is not some exception to the rule, right? That this idea of Schiris Polim, of an employee working for an employer, isn't different than other relationships in Halacha. It's just that Chazal came and said, you know, we are dealing with a pretty important circumstance, and there has to be a penalty if you back out and it causes somebody a loss. And therefore, says the Nasivo, you can't start thinking about equating the employer and employee. So again, what would make you say this? It sort of depends on how do you view this employer-employee relationship. So do we view this as a bind? Is it different such that employers and employees, as I think we're suggesting for the Riva, are just different, and their verbal commitments are more binding, and therefore there can indeed be a natural outcome of a financial penalty for backing out? Or do we say, otherwise, no, really it's the same sort of standard, and Chazal came and imposed a penalty upon this particular type of verbal contract, and it's just a difference in understanding. Just to point out one more place where we see, or really two more places where we see different perspectives on this case of Davar Aved. So we have here the Ramban and the Riva, and this was the comment that the Nesivos was alluding to. I won't read it inside for reasoning of timing, but the Ramban says that, again, if the employer doesn't resort to one of the avenues the Mishnah gave him in order to get his money back, so he doesn't get his money back. So if you hire workers to work for you and then they don't show up and it's going to result in a loss of money for you, all you can either do is hire other workers or trick them into working for you. If you don't, you don't get money. That's what the Ramban says. And he says it because this is not really a kinyan, ain't kan derech l'kinyan. It's just because the workers relied on these workers, he's entitled to these two avenues described in the Mishnah. However, the Ritva argues and says, no, the Ritva says if the employer, again, loses money because of the ending of this relationship in an unfair way, he can even get money from their pockets, at least up until their salary. So even if I don't hire other workers, I can find other workers, I can collect money from my employees, an actual tashlumen from their pocket, because of the fact that they backed out. And again, it depends on how do we really view this relationship. Do we view this verbal commitment specifically in the context of Schiris Polim as a real kinyan or no? It follows other rules of other kinyanim, and Chazal are sort of coming in here and imposing a fine upon them, in which you could say, even though Chazal saw it fit to give the employer certain avenues to get his money back, but they didn't actually find it fit to require the workers to pay money from their pocket. Sure. And here's one more point before I get to one more point, because I want to move on from this. I should note, we've been assuming this entire discussion that the case of Davar Aved, that the case of a case of monetary loss, that even applies when there was just a verbal contract. However, Tzora Choshen points out that there is a minority opinion that even this is only when they actually begin doing the job. That if there's just a verbal commitment, they're not entitled. The employer is not even entitled to davar avi penalties. He's not entitled to hire other workers on their account. And again, those opinions would again be saying this verbal contract is not binding. It's similar to other areas of halacha, and therefore you can't actually collect any money in the event that either party backs out. So I think what we see here is that there are different perspectives. Again, how closely do we compare the idea of schirut polim, an employer-employee relationship, to other kinyanim? Do we see this as an exception? Something different is going on here. There's a greater commitment. Or do we say, no, it's really similar to other kinyanim, and it's just there's certain fines imposed in this particular case. So that's the first point I wanted to make again about just the verbal commitment itself. Yeah, Axe, did you want to ask a question?
Yes, how does the Ramban understand, it's like Sachar Aleihem, that you know, the understanding is, like Rashi, is you make them pay the difference. Ramban would still say that, or?
Sachar Aleihem means, again, Sachar Aleihem means that you can hire other workers, and if you, whatever the difference is, you're saying, if you have to hire them for more money in a case in which they didn't even start working, Would they have to? Okay, that's a fair point. So it sounds like what he's saying is that, I would imagine, what he's saying is that you're right, if the workers cost more money, you can hire them, but you can't just go to the bank or go to court and say, okay, like, where's my money, without hiring more workers, meaning it's at least limited to that case. It's interesting, you're asking a good question. I'm not sure if they didn't start working at all, can you hire higher than their salary was? Meaning, if they were working for you for $10, and can you now go and hire other workers for $12?
That's what Schar Aleihem means.
Agatarm said you can't. Right. So
it's capped.
So it's capped. Right. That's a good point. Okay. So that is the in terms of the verbal contract. Moving on. So now let's look back at this. We have a brisa in source number 13. Again, back to the Mishnah. What we're doing here is investigating this employer-employee relationship and the uniqueness of it through three prisms. One is just a verbal contract. The next category is when it's not just a verbal contract, but rather the work was actually started. And to look further into that, I'd like to look at source number 13. Those of you who have your Gemara, it's on Ayin Vav Amid Beis in the Gemara, and that is encouraged, but it is on the source sheet. And we are going to start from the word Ditanya. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or no, 6 lines up from those wide lines, Ayin Vav Amid Beis. And the Braisa here is going to elucidate the different rules in the Mishnah. So here we go. Ditanya. Again, the case is, if the employer and employee trick each other, they don't have, and it's just a verbal commitment, they don't have any sort of, there's no monetary ramifications, rather, all they have is complaints. Now the Braisa continues. When do we say these things? When were these words said? If they didn't travel. If the donkey drivers went to the place of work and they did not find any grain, right? So the case here is you hired somebody to transport grain from you, from your field, back to another place, either the factory or the threshing floor or to your house, and they go there and they don't find anything to transport. Po'alenu matzu sadek hishilecha. Or we're talking about workers who were there to plow your field, and they go to your field, and what happens? It's wet, and there's nothing to plow. So you hired them, and there's no job for them to do. So what would you have said in such a situation? Right? What happens? You hire workers to go do a job for you. They get to the place of work, ain't nothing happening, right? And there's nothing to do. There's no work for them to do. But you said you would pay them. What would you have said? Curious. Before we go on.
It should be the same as that they did their work.
Should be the same as they did their work.
Because you're the one who prevented them from doing it. They came there to do their work. Why should it be less?
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Could have argued the exact opposite. Honest. All of us want them to work. The field was wet.
In that case,
I would say they'd have to litigate and see if they can get any work in the day.
Okay.
But if they can't, then you got to pay.
Excellent. Okay.
And realistically,
if you don't say what Jerry is saying, you can have a lot of problems in implementation, because we're giving you a 0-100 game. So what happens if they show up and there's 30% of the work that they expected to do? If you're not going to say you have to pay everything, he has to pay 30% of the salary, 70% of the salary, you're going to start having to play games. Either I made a kinyan and I said, I'm paying you this, or didn't make a kinyan and said, I'm paying you this, in which case, that's what I'm paying you, and it's my problem if you don't have anything to do for me, or you're going to be...
I hear. You're saying you can't do... It's hard to... Right.
Or if you go back to the kinyan idea, here there's some... And the thing we said about the physical thing, where there is the boundaries between this. Here, they did their part of the kinyan, so to speak.
Ah. Great point. So just to sort of summarize, I think what we're all saying, one question is, when they travel to their place of work, is that a kinyan? Does that constitute enough of a development in this relationship that there has been an acquisition of the terms of the contract such that they are both required to fulfill their end of the deal? Or do we say that, well, the contract wasn't for you just to travel to your place of work. The contract was for you to travel to your place of work and do the job. Now, it's my fault that you couldn't, but does that necessarily entitle you to payment? That's sort of an open question.
It's not your fault to trade, though. Like,
that's true. That's true. And then the question... That's true. So the question... Well, Ones is a good point. Maybe it depends on whether or not I could have... And the Gemara will say, I could have investigated and seen whether or not there's a job for you to do. Yeah.
So what you said is actually a similar concept in secular law. So in secular law, you have to have a written contract to purchase land.
But where you don't,
there's something called partial performance. So here where the person came to the field, he did something.
Ooh.
It changes it from just a simple verbal contract.
Right.
So there is that analogy.
Very interesting. Yeah. I would be curious to see, in the case of partial performance, what are you entitled to? Are you entitled to some of the payment?
Whether it's a purchase of the land.
Well, that's a purchase of the land. Oh, okay. Got it.
Something partially changes it from just being
correct.
Is showing up their partial performance. It may not be.
Well, that's the question.
Well,
that's
what
he's
at raising. All.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm raising.
Partial performance usually means part of the performance.
Well, part of it, if I
come to a performance.
Okay. Great. All great points made, and they will all be relevant. So let's see. So now we got to, I'm sure you're all on the edge of your seats. What's the Gemara going to say in such a case? So here we go. So if they traveled to the field and it was lecha and therefore not worthy of plowing, no sein lahen scharan mishlam. He is required, Mishalim, wasn't sure, let's say Mishalim. Mishalim, thank you for the correction. So he gives them their full salary. So he has to pay them for just traveling to the place of work. Aval eno dome haba ta'un levo rekan. However, you cannot compare someone who travels bearing cargo to someone who travels empty-handed, meaning, you know, I was going to pay you for transporting goods. You got to go there without transporting anything, so that should result in a deduction from your salary, says the Gemara. And you cannot compare somebody who's doing work to somebody who's doing nothing. So in the case of the workers who travel to the job and then they just do nothing because there's nothing to do, so they get a deduction in salary. And Rashi explains, based on, if you would ask them, you know, I'm going to pay you $100 for this job, well, how much would you be willing to deduct from your salary if I tell you you're going to go there and do nothing?
So a
reduction.
Is there an objective way to the omed then, or it's really whatever they say? I say it.
That's a good question. I would imagine it's how much generally a person would accept. That thing gets generally how these things work. Yeah.
Nobody's mentioned here the fact that the Torah treats workers with kindness, okay? You have to pay them the same day, you can't loisolin, etc. There's a certain kindness that you have for somebody who is poor, like a classic oni or a poel or
right.
You say losalas is that they
it's not that the rabbanon came and made a takana from nowhere. Okay.
Right. You're certain.
One would think.
You're certainly making a good point.
And they're not talking about that.
You're right. Well, you're certainly making a good point that there is a standard in the Torah for treating workers positively and fairly. However, the question is, when there's a breakdown in the relationship, can you even consider them a worker who falls into that category? Meaning, I have to treat workers who actually do a job for me well, if they, right, so the case you mentioned, paying them on time, if they do the job, I must pay them on time. What if they don't do anything? What if we just made a verbal agreement? Are they even considered a worker? Well, you could argue both ways. Maybe they are, but I don't think it's an open, I don't think it's
not
a clear.
If you have the kindness concept, you know, it's like you're playing rough here, okay? In other words, there's ample way. If you're looking at if kindness as one of the sort of subsets here,
okay.
that should decide the issues.
Okay, fair point. I think it's a fair point. I was going to make one quick. Yeah, what's up, Bob?
I don't understand when the Gemara says, first, it says fully pay them, right? And it says you got to estimate what they're doing. Do they come with their tools? Or do they come empty handed?
Right.
But shouldn't we just say every time you gotta pay them what they're promised to do for the work?
Interesting. It's a good point. I think what the Gemara is simply saying is that fairness is important. I think your point is a good one, which is you have to be fair. You cause them to lose their job, essentially, so you have to pay them their salary. But, you know, it's also fair to the owner to say, I didn't promise to pay you $100 for doing nothing. I promised to pay you $100 for doing a job for me, and you're going to get most of your salary, but we have to acknowledge that you got a pretty good deal here. Essentially, you got to go to your work, not do your job, and still get paid, and that has a value to it also. Meaning it's not, let me just make something clear, I think this is an important point, and then I'm going to move on. It's not that we're paying you for being a babysitter, right? We're not paying you for sitting there doing nothing. You're getting, so let's say I hired you to be a carpenter or something like that for a certain amount of hours. You're getting paid a carpenter salary. It's just there's a small reduction in salary because of the fact that you didn't do a carpenter's job. You did nothing. Okay?
Should we assume maybe that like, the actual salary was not determined? It was just said, you know, you'll come to me at work and then...
No, I think there was a salary determined. I think that's exactly the case. But and you get that with a small reduction in salary. Okay? So that is the Gemara says. I just want to finish this Braita and talk about some issues that are relevant to it. So we said, if you go to the place of work, then you get Sharam Yishalem with these reductions. When do we say this? When do we say that it's just Haromes that they back out, let's say? When they didn't begin working. If the workers began their job, and the Braisa is now assuming that that they backed out, Shamin Lahen Masha Asu. We assess the job they've already done. Ketzad, what do we mean by this? Kiblu kamal etzor b'shnei slaim. If they accepted upon themselves to harvest a stalk for two slaim, right, two selas, two coins, katzu chetz v'nichu chetzya, and they stopped halfway, so they harvested half of the stalk. Beged la'arog b'shnei slaim. They accepted upon themselves to weave a garment for two slaim. Argu chetzo v'nichu chetzio. They weaved half of it and they left the other half. Shamin lahen et ma shasu. We assess what they have done. Haya yafesh shisha dinrin. If the entire job is worth six dinrin, which means since a sela is two dinrin, or four dinarim. So there's four dinarim in a sela, and the job was originally worth eight. Now the market goes down, and it's only worth six, and therefore the employer is going to make money because of the fact that these employees backed out. So no tin lahem sela. He gives them half of the original rate. He gives them a sela. Or they can finish the job and get the full salary of two slaim, which is now more than the market rate.
Rashi points out that it's what's left is six dinar, that the market went up.
Ah.
in this case. That haya fishisha dinari means what is left. Now the Baal Bayit has to pay more.
Okay, okay. So the opposite then. Fine. So now the opposite. Thank you for the correction. So what happened is they did half the job, and now it goes up in price. The price of labor goes up. According to this first opinion of the Gemara, they do not have to pay for that appreciation in price. They don't have to pay for it, even though they backed out in the middle of the job. That's his first opinion. V'im sela no ten lahem sela. And if it stayed the same, they still get their sela. That's the first opinion. Redosa Omer, thank you. Shamin lahem masha tid leheh. So, no. We assess what work is still left to be done. Haya yafes shisha dinrin no ten lahem shekel. If the rest of the job is worth 6 dinrin, which means there was an appreciation in price, the price of labor rose, they lose money for what they have already done. And therefore, they only get a shekel, which is half of a sela, right? So to put it in typical terms, let's just say that the whole job, they would have gotten originally $8, and therefore, half the job is worth $4. If the price of labor rises and now the second half of the job is worth $6, what happens? We have an argument. According to the first opinion in this Braita, they get still their full salary, at least for what they did of $4. According to the second opinion in the Braita, they only receive $2 because of the loss of the employer paying more money than you originally agreed to for the second half of the job.
According to the second opinion, if the price of labor went up so much that now it's more than the cost of the original job, so do they have to like not only not get paid, but they have to pay the employer?
No. I think that's pretty clear from the version. No, they don't. But they do lose their entire salary in this case. Again, and this is because they began working. Okay, let's stop there. Just for now. So we have this interesting machloket, right? That there is this step in the agreement of hadchala b'malacha. When you begin working, you begin the job, something changes. At that point, it's not merely a verbal contract. At that point, there's something more happening here. I'd like to investigate what that is. So first of all, taking a step back, it is interesting in and of itself that hadchala b'malacha would be considered a commitment. We don't generally find that, you know, working or even using an object that you're intending to purchase is considered an acquisition of that thing. If I say I'd like to buy your house and I go into your house and I start using it, I haven't acquired it. I have to either pay you money or I have to make some sort of physical change. Or I have to write a contract that I'm buying the house. Just starting to do it is not usually an acquisition. That's one point. It's also interesting to note that in this particular case, there is an argument about how binding the beginning of the work is. So according to the first opinion in the Braita, it doesn't seem that beginning the work has much of an effect at all, right? They began working, they back out. After they started working, now the employer is going to lose money, but they still get their original rate. Whereas Rabbi Dosa is saying that no, that beginning to work already makes them liable for the loss of the employer. Yeah.
It's interesting. This is like every day in the construction industry, where they will show up, they'll start, and then they salt you in. Then they go to another job, and they come back at their leisure. You know, you keep calling them, and they say, no, I can't, because of whatever reason. And it's a trick. This methodology can be used and is used every day. By the workers.
Right. And that's a good point.
And I have one case where the guy said, oh, no, he has to finish the other job. And he was working on, and by accident, it was my wife. She was driving by another place near us, and the guy was there. It's called angesalt in Yiddish, where they
a very legal term.
So this. Yeah. It can be seen the other way.
For sure. So it's interesting. The question is, how do we view beginning the job? What exactly is that? What does that do? Does it depend on your opinion? As Rabbi Yeres mentioned, does it depend upon what type of worker that you are? Which we'll see. It seems that it does. So let's investigate a bit. First of all, we said the first thing to think about is what about not beginning the job, but traveling to the place of work? So here we have a machlok and an argument between Tosfot and the Ramban. So Tosfot says here, I guess we'll read it outside so that we don't get too bogged down. Toso says that the traveling to the place of work is sort of a circumstantial situation, meaning it's not really about traveling to the place of work. That's not what the Braita is talking about. Rather, it's talking about another case, what was mentioned before, which is the question is, when you hire somebody to work for you and now you back out, can they find another job? If they cannot find another job, and you are the cause of their not getting paid today, then you have to pay them. Not necessarily because of any kinyan between you and the employees, but because it's considered damages. It's considered garmi. Garmi is a category in halacha where it's some sort of indirect causation of damages to another party. In this case, since you were the reason, as their employer, you were the reason they didn't get another job and then you backed out on them, that in and of itself obligates you to pay them for not working. However, it's not about traveling. Just usually, once they've already gone to where they were going to do the job, they at that point will not find another job. It's too late in the day. People have already been hired. And since that's usually the case, the Braita says, if they travel to the place of work, then you have to pay them, and if not, then you don't. That's Tosfot's opinion. So Tosfot does not consider traveling to the place of work any type of kinyan. The Ramban disagrees.
Makes a lot of sense, because otherwise you'd have two people going to the same job site. One guy lives next door, so he's not traveling. The other guy's traveling for 2 miles. The guy who traveled gets paid, and this guy next door doesn't get paid.
Right.
Point to Gemara. That's
you're making a great point. You're making a great point.
The place is safe. It's not traveling.
Right. It's not about traveling. You're making a good point, and I will note that the Rishonim, I think the Riva we saw, do indeed distinguish between somebody who's traveling a very long distance to get to where they're working and somebody who's traveling a short distance. Meaning, what is really your job, right? If your job is to transport goods. And let's say the goods are not particularly heavy, but what you had to do was travel a very long way to get the goods. Maybe we'll say it's not just partial. You didn't just partially perform. You did it everything, essentially, and you just didn't get to completely finish. So you're making a good point in terms of distinguishing between how long the distance is. Yeah.
Shouldn't there be a major difference between a Sfir Yoin and a Kabbalah?
Yes.
The mid-part switches.
Yes.
The,
before yes. Then yes. 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 You're making a great point. Making a great point. I want to. Let me actually mention that before we go on. So let me just say the Ramban first, then I'll mention that. There are a lot of issues here, and they're all relevant. We have to try to cover as many as we can. So that's the Tosfos, though, says that traveling to the place of work does not constitute a kinyon. It is merely a circumstance which can either trigger garmi or not. The Ramban argues. The Ramban says that no, that yes, you're right. It's true that even if they don't go anywhere, but the employer stops them from getting another job, that he will have to pay them. However, let's say as follows. Let's say the employer is the only person hiring today, right? So you, let's say, are looking to mow someone's lawn, and you can't find anybody who's looking for somebody to cut their grass. You find one person, he's willing to pay you for mowing the lawn, right? You call him up, fine, it's all set for the next day. All of a sudden, you go there, you go to his house, says, you know what, I cut it myself already, I don't need you, okay? Says the Ramban, in that case, we can't honestly say that your employer caused you a loss, because if it weren't for your employer in that case, you wouldn't have made any money to begin with. It's only because of him that you're making money. Nevertheless, since you traveled to his house to begin doing the job for him, that constitutes a kinyan. That constitutes a fulfillment of this agreement, and traveling itself requires him to pay you as a kinyan. As a kinyan. So we have an argument here. How wide? What is the scope of this idea about chal hamalacha being a kinyan? Right? According to the Ramban, it's pretty wide. It even constitutes beginning to travel. Traveling to the place of work is part of the job, and therefore brings it with it certain financial consequences. Now, since Rabbi Yaris mentioned it, it's important to note that there actually is an argument amongst the Rishonim as to does this apply to all workers or some. I mentioned the Baal HaMa'or, at least the way the Ravid suggests it, says that this is the same whether or not you're a kablon, you're a contractor, which means you're doing the job at your own time, or you are a worker who's working per a certain time and rate. You're working per hour and you're getting paid per hour. And the Baal Ma'or says that even somebody who can theoretically go to your house and do the job for you whenever they want to, and they're just being paid to finish the job, nevertheless, once they travel to your house to do the work for you, that still constitutes the beginning of the relationship and a kinyon, it's definitive, and all these rules apply. The Ravid, if you look at the Rif, disagrees, and he says that no, that we'll only say this for a schir yom, somebody who's hired to do work at a certain time, because for them, they had to come to your house today to do the job. And they're not essentially focused on so only a job. They're also, you have a certain amount of control of their time. It's a timed relationship. It's their day that they've agreed to work for you. So even at the beginning of the day, if they travel and they use some of the time to go to your house, then you have to pay them. A contractor who could come tomorrow or the next day or the next day, and he came today and you turned him down, that doesn't yet begin that relationship. And therefore, you don't have to pay them. So this idea, which is a very big idea in terms of distinguishing, which we'll get to even further in hopefully a few minutes, distinguishing between a kablon or a schir yom is an important one. I just want to make a few more comments on chal hamalacha. Is that okay? All right. So, anyways, one question though is, how do we understand this exactly? This idea of chal hamalacha, is it a full kinyan? When I begin working, is it the same as me paying money for a product of yours? And again, I mean, the obvious question, the elephant in the room, is this is not, you're not buying any product, you're hiring a person to work for you. And we see in halacha that there are differences, even when you begin working, between regular kinyanim and this one, particularly of halachal malacha. So let's see both sides. The Ramban here, I actually like to read that part inside. If you look at the last two lines, he says as follows in source number 15. He says, Kevan she'chilu b'malacha nischayiv mi'akshav v'itein lahem scharam mishalein kemo she'kibel alav. Since they began working, he is obligated now to pay them their entire salary as he agreed. She'keshem she'shar dvarim niknein b'kinyan kaschiru po'alim niknei b'achal ha'malacha. Just like other things are acquired through formal acquisitions, I can buy your object by paying you, I can buy your house through a contract, the employment agreement is acquired through beginning the job. A very definitive statement by the Ramban, this indeed constitutes a kinyan. Likewise, if you look at the 6th source 16, which we'll say outside, the Rivash was asked the following question, or he was bothered by the following correspondent who said, look, I don't understand. The case was as follows. There was a chazan for a Beit Knesset who worked for the community, and the chazan had stipulated certain parts of the agreement verbally to the community without writing it down, right? Not probably not the wisest decision. He probably should have gotten witnesses and had it written down in a contract. For whatever reason, the chazan did not do so. And the Rivash tells this community that nevertheless, they are required to hold to the commitments that they made verbally to this chazan once he has begun working for them. And what they say to the Rivash is, I don't understand. I understand that in terms of things that are normally negotiated verbally, right? Something like a verbal contract, just the very deal between employer and employee, the community and the chazan. I understand why that would be binding, even if it's verbally, because that's the way people do things. That when you hire somebody, sometimes you'll have a verbal agreement, and that's how it goes. But when we're talking about particular stipulations in the deal, those are normally written down, and therefore they should not be binding unless written into the contract. And the Rav Ash responds, you're getting this all wrong. This is not about what's normally done. The reason that you are bound to pay this chazan isn't because when you hire a chazan, you do it verbally. No, the reason is because when the chazan begins to work for the congregation, and when any worker begins to work for their employer, that is a kinyan. It is an acquisition, just like any other acquisition. And therefore, all the stipulations that you made with this chazan are simply a part of that acquisition, which is binding. And if he can prove with witnesses that you made those stipulations, you are obligated to follow them. It's a really interesting tshuva, and he goes further into it, but you see, according to the Ramban and Rav Ash, that hachala hamalacha is viewed as a kinyan. On the flip side, and this is even according to the Ramban, we see that that if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramban himself, although it's a kinyan, when you look back at the Braita, what were the rules of this kinyan? It's not as if we're saying because you began working for me, you have to finish the job. It's not as if we're saying there's a requirement for you to go to work and do what you agreed to do. No. It's just that if you back out, there are consequences, according to Rebbe Dosa, at least. However, if you decide to back out, you have the right to do that. Or if you do it, it works. And I want to highlight this by looking at source number 17 in the Torah. The Torah says as follows, right? Take a look at source 17. Bamed devar mamurim kishalo hechilu b'malacha. When do we say, in the case, let's say for now, of a contractor, that they can back out without penalty in the case when they began working. Hilkach yochol habal habayit lachazor bo kol man she'eino gorem lahem hefseid. Therefore, the bal habayit can retract as long as he doesn't cause them a loss. Aval im hechilu b'malacha ein bal habayit yochol lachazor. Now we're talking about from the employer's perspective. If they began working, the owner, the employer, cannot back out. And if he backs out, no sin lahem sharon kipo abatel. He has to pay them like somebody who didn't actually do any physical labor. So it's interesting. It just said you can't back out. And the next line is, and if you back out, this is the penalty. What is the point of saying you can't back out? If it sounds like it's some sort of moral obligation. It's wrong. You began working, and that is understood as some sort of commitment, and therefore you shouldn't back out. It's morally incorrect. And as you said before, it's we treat workers nicely, and it's wrong to back out. However, if you do, it works. You just have to pay the price for it. And I'll note that in Shulchan Aruch, it leaves this line out altogether. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, I don't have it here on the sheet, it's a bit lengthy. It doesn't even say that you're not allowed to back out in the case of a contractor. It just says, if you do back out, here's what happens, here's the penalty you have to pay. So it's so interesting, right? If I sell you a house, and you buy that house for me, and I decide the next day that, you know what, I really miss my house, and I love the neighborhood, and I really like to go back on this transaction. It's not as if we say, you know what, you can get your house back, but you're going to have to pay a fine for the inconvenience. No, you sold the house. It's not yours anymore. You can't just back out of that deal. But in the case of Schira Polim, at least when the only thing that happened was that they began working, although the Ramban is telling me and the Rav Ash is telling me that constitutes a kinyon in this circumstance, nevertheless, the kinyon is not completely binding. It's different than other circumstances.
No, you can't. If your house is ripped, can they ask me? If you don't sign, you can back up. If you leave it now.
Rabbi, he's talking about after.
After you sign.
Who would Rachar Kach? Okay. But why isn't it just aim balabayas yachol lachzor b'li l'shalem v'im chozer, therefore pay this?
I just think it's sort of, why not? Why even say that? Why not just say, if he's chozer, he has to pay this?
Well, that's what the Shulchan Aruch looked at it and said, I don't need these words.
Right, but I would argue that it's... I would argue that it's... Okay, yeah.
Before, when you were talking about the difference between Yoyim and a Kabbalah, Kabbalah is much worse because he has set aside 10 days or 12 days to do this job, okay? So, and his whole schedule, his next job would be 12, you know, it's you know, it was only the day, okay? But a couple of his damages are much worse.
We're in a different economy.
Yeah.
Ramirez wants to talk about
it. I just want to say, so in terms of the kinyan is not the same as a house. A house can make a kinyan on an object.
Correct.
The kinyan is on the person.
Correct. Well, that's...
The person's work.
Person's time. Unclear. That is exactly the point that I'm trying to make. Agreeing to work for somebody and giving them your time is not clearly not the same as buying an object from someone, and therefore we have these differences. The verbal contract might be different. Working might be different. You could, if you wanted a category, I would suggest what you could say is that, you know, we have these concepts in the case of a loan where there's something called a shibud haguf and there's a shibud mamon. It might be that when you begin working, your body isn't encumbered by this relationship. You're not required physically to finish the job, but you now, your money is encumbered to this relationship. Now you are, now all of your assets are tied to, or at least some of your assets, there is a monetary commitment that you have to ensure he has the ability to finish what you agreed to do for him. And maybe vice versa, also with the worker. So I think what we do see is that although, and Hachal HaMalacha, they're all saying it's a kinyan, it has different rules to it. So the first two, before we get to our last, just to sum up, we've already, and truth is, that we'll get to in a second. We've discussed the verbal agreement and how that might be different. We've discussed when you begin working, and although it's a kinyon, it might be different. The last thing I want to discuss is what about if I make a regular kinyon, a regular acquisition, all the areas of halacha. So let's say the case is, we write a contract. So I hire a worker, we write all the terms out, you're going to do this for me, I'm going to pay you this much. And then somebody wants to back out. What happens then? So this gets very interesting. So before we get to the Makoro, there is one really important source, and it really deserves its own shiur, and that's why I've sort of been navigating talking about this topic at length and not. But the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, it'll be quoted in the sources, that a poel is yachol lachzor bo b'chatziyayim. That if somebody hires a worker at a certain time's rate, they have the capability to back out of that relationship even in the middle of the job, even in the middle of the day. And what is the reason for this? Says the Gemara, Kali b'nei Yisrael avadim, avadai him, that the Jewish people are my servants. Below avadim avadim, and they are not servants to other servants. Meaning there is a prohibition against making a Jewish person your slave. And if indeed a hired worker who was working for you on your time, I agreed that I am going to work for you today and I have to do that job, if I would not be able to back out of it, says the Gemara, that would be a certain form of servitude. I have to do this job for you right now and I have no choice to back out of it. Therefore, it's almost like a slingshot effect. The Torah says since it would have been servitude, the opposite happens and you can back out whenever you want, without paying for it. I appreciate you for being bothered. I do want to, but the question is the extent of that limud. So let's take a look for a second. Do we say that because if he committed to the job, he would be like a slave and therefore encumbered to this agreement, that even if I make a formal acquisition, he is still not required to finish the job? Says the Ritva, we do not say that. If you look at Source 18, We'll talk about it outside just for the sake of time. The Rifa says that once you make a formal acquisition through a contract or something like that, even a Schir Yom cannot back out of the agreement. Can't do it. You are then required to finish the job. If we sign a contract, you can't just say, I don't want to do it anymore. It's different than in a case of where you just begin working. That's a quasi-kinyan. When you make a real kinyan, can't back out. Neither the Baal HaBayit nor the worker. That's the Rifa. And the Shach argues. The Shach says, no, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim avadai heim means that a hired worker never has a shibud haguf upon him. You are never physically tied to this transaction. You can always back out whether or not you started working. If I write a contract, if I pay you money, doesn't make a difference. You can still back out. The Torah says you can't hire yourself out as a slave. If you look at the Ritvaz and the Shvat Yaakov, they disagree. They say no. That when do we only said that in the case of Hadchal HaMalacha, which is a quasi kinyan, right? A quasi kinyan. It's not a real kinyan. You didn't actually sign a contract. It just you began working. It's a sign of a further commitment. That's when the Gemara says you can back out if you actually sign a contract. That's a contract. It's binding. And the Shvat Yaakov says, as I think you were going to say, Jerry, the Shvat Yaakov says, you're not really a slave. Not really a slave. Right? It's not a complete servitude. You're doing a specific job at a specific time. It's a bit like a slave because you're committed to the employer and therefore you have more flexibility. But you're not really a slave if I actually make a kinyan that's always binding. And the Ravah says as well that once you make an employment agreement, if you want to back out of it, you need another transaction. I can't simply go to you and say, well, I'm allowing you to back out. Mechila doesn't even work. Mechila doesn't work. I can't say I'm allowing you to back out of this relationship. You need to actually formally cut ties with the employer. Again, because a kinyan is binding. Okay? So, before we get to the last Mar Makom, we've seen so far that it's kind of interesting. Do we view, what everybody's been pointing out is, a person working for another person is not the same as acquiring an object. It's just not the same. To what degree is it not the same? Does that mean you can never acquire them? Does that mean that only certain things will work to acquire them? It's up in the air. Do we, and we do, differentiate between somebody who's working on time and someone who's just doing a job? If I can do the job on my own time, since I had that freedom and flexibility, this rule that I can never be encumbered to the deal doesn't apply at all, say the poskim. And a kablon, once they do the kinyon, for sure cannot back out. And just to leave you with some more food for thought, I want to just finish with the Rambam. The Rambam is talking about a case of two different partners, and he says that even if they make a kinyon sudar, they hand the handkerchief over to each other, they're not completely partners. That is just a kinyan devarim, a verbal agreement. And says the Ravid, Rabotai horu she'adam yochol lahaknut etz atzmo lechavero. No, a person can give sell themselves or make themselves acquired to their friend, the kinyan kidin avadin, like a slave. Kimosha matzino she'omer yakachi adai leosein. We find a case where a person can sanctify their handiwork to Hashem. So the point is that what the Rambam is saying here is that we do find a case where you can indeed sell yourself in the case of slave. And one of the big questions going forward is, do we view this as that case? Am I acquiring the employee? Am I acquiring the employee partially? I don't own him or her, but I acquire what they do for me and that's mine. Do we distinguish between a kabbalah and a poel? And how different is an employee relationship from other cases of avadim and other cases of kinyan? And these are the questions, I think, that really govern the rest of the parak. So thank you all for your contributions and discussion. And the next week, we'll continue on
God
to
willing,
a new...
The shiur for the next 2 weeks is going to cover the issue of taromes and the complaints that you have when somebody backs out of a deal and to what extent that is a...
Issue emails?
Yeah.